La Jolla, California, UC San Diego Athletics presents TritonCast, the podcast for the UC San Diego Tritons. Here are your hosts, Jeff Toriel and Jenny Stevens.
Welcome to episode 15 of TritonCast, the official podcast for UC San Diego Athletics. Whether you found us on your favorite podcast platform, the UCSD Tritons website, or on social media, we're so glad that you're with us today. And if you like what you hear, and we sure hope that you will, make sure that you subscribe, rate, and give us a brief review. We'd definitely appreciate it. We've got a great show in store for you today. What have we got, Jeff?
Jenny, in today's Triton Spotlight, we'll have a conversation with Taylor Ian Tosca of the women's rowing team. Taylor has served as team captain for the Tritons, as well as the fundraising chair of Triton Athletes Council. And when she's not busy with all that, she loves to scuba dive. She shared with us how she first started diving and some of her favorite spots she's visited. Our conversation with Taylor Ian Tosca comes your way shortly in this week's Triton Spotlight.
But first, we go around campus. Visit UCSDTritons.com for the latest feature stories on current and former scholar athletes. Check out the feature on women's water polo player Holly Main, who's a seven-time national champion in life-saving competitions. And while you're on the website, be sure to read about women's rowing alumna Shruti Kamath, who joined the Navy after her time at UC San Diego.
Coming up later in today's show, we chat with Beth Mounier and Delana Sampton of UC San Diego women's basketball staff about Race for Change. That'll come your way in the campus spotlight. But first, it's on to this week's Triton Spotlight. Here's our conversation with Taylor Ian Tosca.
So tell us, Taylor, when did you first become interested in rowing?
So I actually grew up in Florida. I lived in Florida for 12 years. And the community that we lived on, it's like a small town outside of Orlando called Windermere. And it's really small, really quaint, and it's surrounded by lakes. So every time whenever I would like drive somewhere, we'd always see like crews out on the water. And I just thought it was like so cool. And I wanted to at least try it out. So when I was in middle school, I think I was like eighth grade, I actually did like learn to row camp there for a week and absolutely fell in love with the sport. And when we moved to California, unfortunately, there wasn't a club that could work with my school times. Like, I really wanted to try to get back into it in high school. But because of that, I kind of had to put my rowing career on pause for a little bit. And I just played sports with my school.
Were you able to get back into rowing before your time in college?
Yeah. So I kind of knew just from like talking with the girls that I did learn to row with. They were all like high school rowers. A lot of them were looking to get recruited by colleges. And they were saying that rowing was actually a sport that you could get involved in college, like without having done the sport before. We have like a level called novice rowing. And they said that you could do that after you were already enrolled in college. So I wasn't like too afraid to put my rowing career on hold just because I knew that was always an option to get back into it. But once I started talking with coaches about that, and the opportunity came where I could get signed to UCSD and kind of as a, like an out of sport athlete, I decided I didn't want to do my novice year in college. Like I wanted to be part of the varsity squad right away. So I found a club that started, like its practices were like from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. But I was like, it's worth it. I'll do it for like my senior year of high school so that come college, like I'm with the whole team.
And how did you decide on UC San Diego?
So I actually did a summer camp between my junior and senior year of high school. It's called Cosmos and it's run by the UC schools. And I did it at UC San Diego and it's kind of like a math and science camp. I'm an engineering major. So it was just kind of good to get exposed to what engineering was like at UCSD. And so from that experience, I knew that I wanted to come to school here, but also just from being in San Diego and seeing crews out on Mission Bay, I was like, I really want to row here as well. So that's what got me interested in not only going to school at UCSD, but also wanting to row here.
Do you feel like that experience kind of helped you with your college transition?
Oh yeah, of course. 'Cause when we were housed on campus for the camp. We were actually like housed in the dorms at ERC, and we got to eat in the dining halls and stuff. So I kind of already like knew my way around campus. I think before a lot of people that are just like starting school here, because like they never had that experience of actually living it before. And I got to do that for like a month.
Right. So when you arrive at UCSD, is collegiate rowing what you expect it to be or not really?
It's a lot harder than I expected it to be. With my high school rowing team, like the team that I was with, like for my senior year, obviously it was my novice year. So it was a lot more like laid back than I think a varsity program would have been in high school. But even then it was just like such a small club. Like a lot of people just kind of did things on their own, especially being like so early in the morning. Sometimes when people couldn't make it, they would just kind of do like the workouts on their own in the afternoon. So it was very much like independent, like you were very independent in that environment. And I think coming to UCSD, it's like a different level of like commitment and sacrifice. Like you have to be with the team and you have to be like, it's just like a lot, it's different, but I would say like it's a lot more intense than what I was used to. But I mean, I've learned so much from it and I grew so much from it, so I'm really grateful for it.
That's awesome. And did that step up in intensity also match what you experience in the classroom or not necessarily?
Yeah, definitely. Being in engineering, it's like not really a field that you're exposed to in high school. Like I feel like a lot of the STEM fields, like you take math and you take science and everything, but nobody really takes engineering in high school. So I had no idea what to expect, like coming to college and like finally getting involved in the field. So it was very different. And of course, like college is a lot more intense than high school. So it was just like a lot of getting used to, but I think rowing actually helped in that because you have so many things going on every day. Like it forces you to be good at time management. And I think without that, then I wouldn't have been as successful in the classroom as I.
Yeah. And you're already entering your senior year of college. What have been some of the highlights for you, whether rowing related or just anything at UC San Diego?
I always just like cherish the people that I met at UCSD. The people are kind of like what made college the best 4 years of my life for me. The rowing team is like my second family. Yeah, I just kind of like do everything with like the people on my team and people in athletics. So all the highlights for me are just like this little things that I do with my friends, like my team kind of early on, like my freshman year, my sophomore year, we always like ran the Carlsbad half marathon together. And like, that was something that like not everyone can say that they do like with their closest friends. So just like little things like that are always highlights for me.
And talk a little bit too about your relationship with the coaching staff. I mean, Colin and Kim, both incredible coaches at UC San Diego.
Yeah, they're amazing. They're like my best friends as well, which I think not a lot of people can say about their coaches. Yeah, I mean, they're just like great people. They genuinely like care about their athletes as people, not just as their athletes. And I think that's really special. And yeah, I can speak for the team when I like Colin, we call like Colin like our dad pretty much. Like he's such a dad to us. And yeah, we're so grateful to have coaches that are like so caring, but also push us to be like the best athletes that we can be.
That's so awesome. And I know you had a leadership role this past season. You were serving as a team co-captain. Why did you want that role?
For me, it was always like I wanted to like give back to a community that has already given me so much. And I think being like in a leadership role like that, you do have a lot of responsibility to represent your team well and to just like lead your team. That's like a huge sacrifice on your part. Like you kind of have to give up some of like your own needs for the benefit of the group. And I think that was the best way for me to show how much I cared about the rowing program and just to like give back to the team, because like they've given me experiences and friends that I would not be able to have if I weren't on the team. And I just wanted to give back to that.
That's so selfless. I love it. And I mean, clearly you guys are a very tight-knit team. How would you describe the team dynamic?
Yeah, like I said before, we're like a family. And like also with family, there's kind of like inter-family conflict and stuff. But we're always like able to just kind of like push that aside and put our like own needs aside for like the betterment of the team. And everyone is just like working so hard. Like we're pushing each other every day, sacrificing ourselves every day, like waking up at 4:30 and like going to the boathouse together. And like it really is just like a bonding experience, and we've gotten like so close because of it. So yeah, I'd say like the team dynamic is very much just like a family.
Yeah, 4:30. Wow, I don't know if I could do that. Are the early mornings still tough for you, or are you used to it by now?
I'm pretty used to it by now. I mean, we've kind of had a long break from it unfortunately because of COVID. So it'll be kind of like it'll be interesting to try to get back into it for this upcoming year, but I'm so excited. Like I will never take getting up at 4:30 in the morning for granted ever again.
Right. Yeah. What's the team mindset going into this year? Because it's such a unique year, obviously COVID of course. And I mean, Division One. So how is the team feeling heading into this upcoming year?
I think the team is just really excited to get back. It was unfortunate for us when COVID hit. Our season got canceled the day we were supposed to leave for our first race. So we never got to race this past season. And I think that hit a lot of people really hard, like just not having the opportunity to race at all for the year. So I think finally being able to come back and like at least get started on something again, people are just so excited to get back.
That's great. And not only have you served as a team captain, but you've also been very active with the Triton Athletes Council. How was it that you decided to get involved with TAC?
When I was a freshman, one of the highlights of my freshman year was TAC challenges. And TAC challenges are like when the whole team, like all the teams go to like a specific sporting event. And within that sporting event, like for example, swimming, like we went to a swim meet, and the TAC challenge for that was like a swim relay between all the teams, and just watching that and like watching the community come together and like in a competitive like setting like that, it was just really fun and really cool. And I was like, this is something I want to get involved in. So I applied for TAC my sophomore year and was fortunately chosen to be a TAC rep for my sophomore year. And I've just been involved ever since.
What exactly does it entail being a TAC representative?
So TAC is kind of like the voice of student athletes. So we work with the athletic department and like the greater San Diego community on how UCSD athletics can get involved in our community and our school more. So we like come up with initiatives and events every year to just kind of like support that. Like we do fundraisers, community service events, social events, stuff like that, just to increase our involvement in the community.
And how did you decide that you wanted to be part of the executive board? Because I know you've been selected as the fundraising chair again for this upcoming year after serving as your junior year too.
Yeah, pretty much similar to why I wanted to be a captain of my team. Like TAC has given me so much, and I know like how much work goes into being on e-board. When I was a sophomore and I wasn't on e-board, my partner, she was. And so I just got to like see firsthand the like kind of like that extra step of leadership that was necessary to be part of e-board. And that was something that I wanted to do. And I was so grateful to have gotten the fundraising position. I've had a lot of fun organizing like the fundraising events and stuff. So yeah, exactly the same like as why I wanted to be a captain, just to like give back to the community.
Are there any fundraising events in particular that stand out to you as ones that have been really fun to plan or that you've been super grateful to be involved with?
Yeah, I think my favorite one. So throughout the years, we've had like Gatorade Pong tournament, which is like water pong. And a lot of people on my team were saying, oh, it'd be really fun if instead of Gatorade Pong, we could do Gator Rage Cage, which is like another type of game. And so when I was elected to be a fundraising chair, I was like, oh, I actually can plan this. Like, how I want it and how my team wants it. So I was getting input from everyone. I was like, does this sound like a good idea? Like, how should it run? And then so last fall was actually the first year where we had a Gatorade Cage tournament, and I got like such great feedback from that. People loved it, and I think that just made it like worth it for me.
That's so cool. And how is it? Because I know TAC is obviously made up of representatives from all the different sports. So what is it like for you getting to interact with people from teams that you might not necessarily see on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think that's like one of the biggest benefits from being on TAC. Usually people are kind of just in their own like little team bubbles, and it's really hard to meet other people when you're in that. And so TAC is like one of those great ways just to meet other people. So I have like so many friends on, I think I have like at least one friend on each team, which is so awesome. And like, it does kind of coincide with our goals to like get greater like community involvement and like get teams more involved with each other. And I think that's really cool.
And I know as a fundraising chair, obviously you guys are starting to plan for this upcoming year, and this year will probably be a little different. I mean, events might be virtual, that sort of thing. Have you started to think about yet how things will be different for this upcoming year?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot, especially like with going into Division One. So when we were Division Two, our fundraising money all had to go to Make-A-Wish because that was like the Division Two organization. And being in D1, we actually get to choose where our money goes for fundraising. So that was just kind of like another thing to think about. As far as like the actual events, so we also do food fundraisers with restaurants, and I have been in contact with like a few of the restaurants that we do fundraisers with, and they are starting to reintroduce their fundraisers with like takeout options and to go and stuff. So I think we'll still be able to do that, which is really awesome. And as far as like the organization and the goals that we want to have for this year, fundraising and community service are actually going to be working together a lot this year, more than we have so in the past. And I think our focus, I think we kind of came to an agreement that our focus is going to be on like COVID relief. So pretty much like donating to healthcare workers or students that have been affected by COVID. We haven't really like worked out the actual like logistics of it yet, but that's kind of like the big picture.
I love that. Aside from TAC and rowing, what are some of the things you're looking forward to about this upcoming year?
I'm just interested to kind of like see how everything's going to work out. Like, we're still in summer right now, and just kind of like hearing all of like the return to learn ideas and stuff. I'm just kind of like interested to see how it all plays out. So, and then also like, I mean, most of the stuff that I do look forward to is like with rowing and TAC, just because of like all of the events and stuff that we have. So that's obviously something. But I guess just like getting back into the swing of things, like having a schedule again and like some sense of normalcy, I guess, like going back.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're looking forward to having the Scholar Athletes back on campus in a very safe manner, of course. I know you're very passionate about rowing and TAC, but you're also very passionate about scuba diving. What sparked that interest for you?
Yeah, so my parents were actually very avid divers, like even before they met. And so when they like met and they started dating, they would like go scuba diving together and stuff. Like, that was just kind of a thing that they did. And they were super into it. But when I was born, they kind of had to put that on hold to like take care of me. But they were like, as soon as she's of age, like, she's getting her license and we're going diving again. So when I was 12, they like put me in school for diving, and I've been doing it ever since, and I love it.
We're chatting with Taylor Iantosca on this episode of TritonCast. Taylor, you started when you were 12. At what point did you start to take diving pretty seriously?
I'd say when I got into high school, I was looking for things to do over the summer. And I'm like a very adventurous person. So I was thinking, my dad's a pilot, so I was like, oh, that'd be really cool to do over the summer. And then he was like, yeah, I guess that's pretty cool. But like, have you ever thought about kind of taking diving even further? Like, I know how much you love it, and I think that would be like a lot more fun way to spend your summer. And then so kind of the option at that point was to either stay in California and go for my pilot's license, or there was like a program in the Caribbean for high school students to like kind of progress in scuba diving, and the Caribbean sounded way more fun, so I decided to go that way.
What was it like when you arrived in the Caribbean? How was that program?
It was like kind of like starting anything new. It was kind of intimidating at first. Like, you show up and like reading the program itinerary, you know you're going to be living on a boat with like 15 other high schoolers, but you've never met them before, so it's just kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to mesh well with these people. You just kind of have like all these what ifs going through your head. But as soon as like I landed in the Caribbean and as soon as I met everyone, like all those worries went away and everyone was just like so cool, so welcoming. And it was like one of the best experiences of my life.
Was the diving challenging physically for you, or was it about where you were at already?
It was about where I was at already. I usually like throughout my diving career, I guess I'd say, like every time like I'd go out with my parents, like we'd always find an opportunity for us to go diving. So I was doing it like pretty frequently. And I guess all the students that were also there were doing the same. So it was pretty just like natural for all of us, I think.
When you look back on that experience of living on the boat with 15 other high schoolers, what stands out to you in your mind?
I mean, just like the experience as a whole, like not many people can say that they've done that. And I guess like some of the people that I met on the trip are like some of my best friends today. And I guess just like it's just kind of cool seeing how like a common interest can bring together so many people from like various backgrounds, like people on the boat. Like, I think I was the only person from the West Coast. Everyone else was like either from the Northeast. We had two girls from Paris. And it's just like crazy how something as little as just like a hobby can bring people from all over the world together and like have this shared experience together. And for me, that was really awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so interesting. And I know at one point you even decided to get your instructor's license. What was that experience like?
Yeah, so 2 years after I did my first the high school program, I decided to go back to the Caribbean and get my instructor's license. And that was like also very challenging in itself, because as once you get into a certain level of scuba diving, you're no longer really doing it for yourself. You're doing it for other people. So being an instructor, you start to concern yourself with other people and how they're taking up the sport. And kind of like going back, there's like kind of like a common theme, I guess. Like, I just, scuba diving has given me so much and like allowed me to meet so many people. And I just wanted to like share that with other people that would be interested as well. So I wanted to like give back to the sport in that way.
That's so awesome. What was that next step then from there in order to get your instructor's license?
Yeah, so like going back to the Caribbean, I was there for like the summer, and half of it was kind of like interning with the program that I was doing my license with. So I did get to work with like other instructors and other students. A lot of the students that I worked with during that time period were middle schoolers, and I love working with kids, so it was really fun for me. And they're just like super fun to hang out with, like when you're not scuba diving and stuff, they're really entertaining. So that was like a really fun interning process. And then the second half of it was actually doing like the schoolwork and like really honing down your skills. And there's like a 2-day instructor's exam that you have to take. So it was all just like prepping for that. And that was like a lot more intense than working with the kids. But yeah, it was just like, it's very different.
And once you had your instructor's license, then how were you able to utilize that?
So I actually worked in San Mateo for a summer. I worked for Wallens Dive Center. And pretty much like the goal of the company was to like obviously get people certified, but since not many people come to San Mateo like wanting to dive, a lot of people that go through our program are actually like already have planned vacations, like they were going to Hawaii or like Maldives or something. And they wanted to dive there, but they didn't want to waste their vacation time, like going to school when they could be out like doing fun things in Hawaii. So they would do all of like their basic pool skills and their classroom studies with us. So my job was a lot of like teaching them like the coursework, grading tests and stuff, and then going in the pool with them and teaching them the basic skills. And then we'd write them a referral so that when they actually like go to Hawaii or wherever they may be going, then they can finish up their license like in the oceans there, which is a lot better than trying to do it all in a pool in San Mateo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned that you teach them their basic skills in the pool. What sort of skills does that entail?
Yeah, so all of the skills are basically just kind of like what if scenarios. Like scuba diving in itself is not difficult, but there are some things that could happen that pose like a risk to anyone who's diving. So it's pretty much just how to like mitigate those risks and how to keep yourself safe. Like if an emergency were to happen, like if you were to lose your mask, how would you deal with that? Or like if your regulator were to get knocked out of your mouth, how do you recover that and clear it with clear it out of water so that like you can breathe again and stuff like that.
So I know you've done a ton of diving over the years. You mentioned the Caribbean. What are some of your favorite places that you've dived?
The Caribbean is definitely my favorite place. We spent a lot of time. There are two parts of the Caribbean. There's like the Windward Islands and the Leeward Islands. The Windward's like the northern belt and the Leeward's the southern. And I spent a lot of time in the Leeward Islands, like the southern belt. And that part of the Caribbean is very much not touristy. So a lot of the dive sites there are very untouched. So when you go diving, like all the coral is like super bright. There's so much marine life there. So I'd say that's definitely my favorite place for diving.
Yeah. Aside from coral, have there been any other interesting like animals or plants or anything that you've seen while you're underwater?
Yeah. My favorite animal to see is an octopus. I just love watching them underwater and like how they interact with their surroundings and stuff. Like it's really cool watching them change colors too. And there have been like shark encounters too, nothing like aggressive, which I know like some people are afraid of sharks because of how aggressive they can be, but for the most part, like they're pretty tame. And I would say that they're more afraid of you than they are like than you are afraid of them. But yeah, they're pretty calm and stuff. So they just like swim circles around and just are more curious than anything. So those are always really cool to see. Turtles as well. Everyone loves turtles.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Such cute little animals. I know obviously you're busy with rowing and tack and just everything that comes along with that. So have you had any recent diving experiences or is that kind of on hold for you for now?
It's on hold for now. I think the last time I went diving was last summer in Croatia. A few of my friends and I, we just went on a Europe trip together and I saw that there was like a diving opportunity in Croatia. So I spent a morning out with them and that was really cool. Saw an octopus there. So that was the highlight. But yeah, for now it's kind of on hold just because of everything going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And are there any specific spots that you would hope to get to dive in the future?
Definitely Thailand. My mom's actually from Thailand and I'm half Thai. And that's where she and my dad spent a lot of their time diving. And they would tell me all of these stories about how they got to see whale sharks and all these other cool animals. So I definitely want to go back to Thailand for diving.
That's so awesome. I definitely hope you get the chance to do that. Well, we are out of time for today. Thank you so much for joining us, Taylor.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jenny, I enjoyed your conversation with Taylor. And I really loved hearing about her love for diving and all of the amazing places she's been on a dive already.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, as she's talking about these places, she's just painting these pictures in my head. And I love that it's such a family affair for them and that her parents were the one who got her into diving in the first place.
No question. And they, they made it pretty clear to her at a young age that they had every intention of getting her in the water, and they've certainly done that. Coming up on October 15th through 18th, the UC San Diego women's basketball team is hosting a virtual 5K called Race for Change. We're joined now by Beth Mounier and Delana Sampton of the women's basketball coaching staff to tell us all about Race for Change and what the inspiration was behind it. Jenny?
Beth Mounier and Delana Sampton from the UC San Diego women's basketball staff join us in today's Campus Spotlight. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Delana, for our listeners who might not be quite as familiar with the Race for Change, give us a little bit of a rundown as to what it is.
Race for Change is a virtual 5K that our founder, Beth, actually put together. It was kind of her dream project. But its task is to create systemic change on our campus. So that really starts with us. So you can run the virtual 5K anywhere, and all proceeds are going to go to our Black Resource Center, which is really good.
That's so amazing. And Beth, I know Delana said this was kind of your project. So where did the inspiration come from for you?
The weekend before, we had our first town hall after George Floyd was murdered, and our athletic department got together and we had just an open discussion. The weekend before, I had run a virtual 5K with Spartan, and I just went to a gym, did the thing. And when I was thinking about what are actual things that we could do on our campus as a community to raise money, raise awareness, build community, I thought of this idea of people from all over the country, wherever they are, they can run, they can participate, and they can help see us make change on our campus so that the student athletes feel seen and have a space where they feel like they can breathe outside of, you know, where they're playing their sport. And so that's sort of where it came from for me.
That's incredible. And Delana, I know you mentioned earlier that the proceeds are going towards the Black Resource Center for UC San Diego. So talk a little bit about why you guys decided on the Black Resource Center.
So we decided on the Black Resource Center for a couple of reasons. First, we know that it's already a place that is working on enhancing the student experience. So with that emphasis, we know that our Black scholar athletes at UC San Diego need more support. They need to be safe, and they need to have a space where they can be themselves all the time. And that's outside of our walls. So I think that was a big part of looking for that space when we're not there, and knowing that the Black Resource Center can be that for them. So I have like a personal kind of connection when I was I'm an alum. So when I was a student here, the Black Resource Center really worked as that for me. So I think it was a pretty easy decision. When it came down to it, we wanted to make sure that we were going to actually make some sort of change here on campus.
When you were a student here, Delana, how did the Black Resource Center impact your experience?
I think simply put, it gave me a place to like breathe and to, I didn't realize that I needed that space. And I walked in there and I was just like able to put like a burden down and talk to people who were experiencing things that are similar to what I was. And it was effortless, which was really cool. So it was like, as soon as I walked in, I knew I was welcome, and, some walls came down.
That's awesome. It's definitely important to have that space here on the UC San Diego campus. Now, Beth, I know October 15th through the 18th is when the virtual 5K will take place. What's the significance? Why'd you guys choose that date?
We chose that date because traditionally, for a long time, that was the day that basketball season started. That's where you go from preseason to full practice. A lot of teams used to have their Midnight Madness on October 15th to kind of highlight the start of a new season. And so we thought it would be great to kind of represent that date as a date where schools from around the country will take time away from the basketball court to direct attention to social change, systemic change on their campuses.
Beth, it's clear that you guys are trying to get the basketball community involved. Why do you think it is so important for the basketball community to get involved with creating systemic change and fighting racism?
You know, I think that every program on this campus has a platform to speak. And I think that basketball, you know, if you look at the NBA and the WNBA as our examples, you know, they have really been doing a good job of speaking, of recognizing their players as so much more than the athlete that they are on the court, and giving them space to speak and really push for things to be different and for things to change. And so I think that it's important for every team to be involved in this, but we just know we're connected with basketball. And so we wanted to be exactly where we were and try to invite as many other people to participate as we can, to just use the voices we have and the platform we have to speak on issues that are important to us.
Absolutely. And I know that the women's basketball scholar athletes and many of the scholar athletes at UC San Diego have been doing so. And I know both of you were scholar athletes as well. Delina, talk a little bit about the platform that you had and how you've seen the issues of social equality be presented now versus when you were back as a student athlete.
Yeah, I think that it's a little bit more mainstream to use that platform than it was when I was a scholar athlete. Whether it's like what you're wearing during your interviews after games, or if it's something that you say during a radio interview, whatever it is, people are, I guess, more permitted to say things. But I know that when I was a scholar athlete, I definitely talked to behind the scenes with a lot of people on our campus with, and just to talk about that was happening when Kaepernick was kneeling with the NFL. So I was definitely feeling kind of emotionally tied to do something. And a lot of the work was being done behind the scenes, but now I definitely feel as though our scholar athletes have the space and almost are expected to use their platform to make change and to say something and to not let the norm continue because it's unacceptable.
Absolutely. And Delaney, I know that you've been working with the women's basketball team to provide anti-racism education. Talk a little bit about what that experience has been like for you.
Yeah, it was just needed. I think everyone needs to be doing anti-racist training and just to make that part of their identity. When George Floyd was murdered, it was a wake-up call for people. And it was different than when Trayvon Martin was murdered because we're in a pandemic. So people had time to sit and think about it and they just couldn't go along with their lives. So I feel like this one kind of tore through our nation, tore through the world, and woke people up a little bit on what they're doing to contribute, not just that it's happening outside of them. So with that, we knew that we needed to make change. And we had this time through Zoom where we could meet with our team. We couldn't do anything basketball related. And it was a great time to introduce this topic that we all felt very passionate about and make it part of our team's DNA. So it started in the pandemic and we came up with like a little, like lesson plan and kind of where we're going to go for through the time that we're going to teach. And it definitely kind of spearheaded our teachings, but it was a group effort with our staff to make sure that we were educating them on things like that we've made very clear are bigger than basketball and that are important for all of our scholar athletes to leave with is to have that anti-racist identity and pass that along to people they meet and their families. And that's really what our impact is supposed to do, make them better people, not just better athletes.
Absolutely. And you said bigger than basketball. I love that. It really is so much bigger than basketball or even sports in general. Beth, what are some of the goals for Race for Change and what do you hope that people get out of it?
I think that the biggest goal is to just invest in the Black Resource Center and invest in the partnership that we hope is many, many, many years to come. To invest in a space like we've talked about to one day, you know, their space is small but mighty on campus. It would be incredible if, you know, one day through this race, their space could be bigger. But also, Race for Change is happening across 20 campuses on the same weekend. And so if you look at it from a large scale, Cal Women's Basketball is funding a full-time position, which is incredible. And, you know, we have teams from the West Coast and the East Coast and the South and all over who are doing this. And I think the goal is just to see systemic change in as many local communities as possible. You know, we understand if you want to tear something down, you have to understand how it's built. And so, you know, we think of ending racism or walking towards equality, and we look at a national level. But if you were to break down, you know, how these structures exist, it actually exists on really small, like each campus, each team, each community, each county. They have their own set of rules and guidelines and policies and procedures in which they do things. And so Race for Change, the hope is that, you know, on each one of the teams and programs who are participating, that there's steps towards systemic change in each place, and that eventually there'll be change across the country, across women's basketball, across men's basketball, through this race.
Definitely an admirable goal. And Beth, you mentioned that a lot of schools across the nation are taking part. What's the reaction been like from these other schools and just in general?
It's been positive. You know, I think it's a lot of work to put on a fundraiser. And so I think that there's, you know, a lot of questions, but there's a lot of hope. I think that, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to invite people is because you felt like so many people wanted to help, but didn't know how. And so we created this to give them a how. We've done a lot of the legwork for you. We've sent you a lot of the things you will need. And now you just take it and run with it and make it yours. And so it's been positive. They've been appreciative of us organizing it. And I think that they're all really excited, heavy burdened, but excited to kind of lead charge on their campus.
Well, best of luck with everything. We're really proud of you guys for putting this together. And we hope that definitely a lot of systemic change and education comes out of this. Thanks so much for joining us here today on TritonCast.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Jenny.
Thanks, Jenny.
Wow, Jenny, it's so great to see the women's basketball team using their platform to make a difference and supporting the UC San Diego Black Resource Center. To sign up for Race for Change, visit crowdsurf.ucsd.edu/raceforchange.
Coming up on episode 16 of TritonCast, we chat with Dr. Kenneth Schell. Dr. Schell talked about his experience as the first Black fencer at UC San Diego and discussed why he decided on a career in pharmacy. New episodes of TritonCast premiere each Wednesday.
Thanks for listening to episode 15. For more on TritonCast, follow us on Twitter @TritonCast. And if you've got suggestions for a future guest, send us a tweet or email Jenny and me at TritonCast@ucsd.edu. We'll see you back here next week.
You've been listening to TritonCast. TritonCast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at TritonCast@ucsd.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter @TritonCast.